Welcome to today's deep dive. If you think you're good at, stretching a dollar, our sources today are going to completely rewrite your definition of survival.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's wild.
Right. Picture this. It's the 1930s. The Great Depression dust storms are blowing away your livelihood, and your family is so broke, you're literally cutting up tanned cat hides just to make shoelaces.
Yeah, cat hides. And yet, somehow, your door is always open to feed every single hungry stranger who walks past.
Which sounds completely impossible.
It does, but that was the actual daily reality for Marie-Louise Leroux Leclerc.
Okay, so our mission today is to explore excerpts from the family history book, Onward to the Unknown, and basically figure out the mechanics behind her incredible life.
Right, because she was born in 1893. She was a twin, and she marries Howard Leclerc in 1917.
And they start a farm down in the Vaughan District, right?
Exactly. But then the Hungry 30s hit. The family remembers that, quote, even the nickels were small.
Which is such a vivid phrase. But here's the thing I keep getting stuck on. No traveler, no poor sod ever left their farm with an empty stomach.
Never.
But the math on this makes zero sense to me. I mean, they had eight children.
Yeah, eight kids.
If you have absolutely no money, you can't just materialize food for drifters. How did they do it?
Well, the math doesn't work if you're using dollars and cents, but Marie-Louise wasn't trading with money.
What was she using then?
She was trading with this extreme, relentless physical resourcefulness. Like, she essentially subsidized her radical hospitality by eliminating the financial cost of literally everything else in their lives.
Oh, wow. Which brings us back to the cat hides.
Exactly.
Because, people today love to brag about upcycling, like, oh, I turned a mason jar into a soap dispenser to save $5.
Right, a fun little a weekend project.
Yeah, but Marie-Louise's tactics make modern thriftiness look like an absolute joke. We're talking about a barrier against actual frostbite here.
And it went way beyond shoelaces, too. I mean, consider their winter clothing. She spent these endless evenings washing, carding, and spinning raw wool into yarn.
Just to knit garments for a family of 10.
Yeah, which was a survival mechanism passed down from her mother, Sophie. When capital completely vanishes, your only currency is your time and your hands.
So, by manufacturing their entire existence from scratch, she saved those literal crumbs to share with the wider world.
That's exactly it.
Okay, so the physical survival is covered by honestly endless grueling labor. But I feel like that level of exhaustion would break anyone's spirit.
Oh, for sure, it would.
How did they survive psychologically in that kind of isolation, especially without modern comfort?
Oh, they had to manufacture their joy with the exact same deliberate effort they used to make their clothes.
Because there's no TV, no radio.
Right. A house out on the prairie in winter could feel like a tomb. So they bonded over really fierce games of cribbage and bridge.
And Marie-Louise was basically the entertainment center herself.
She really was. She played the button accordion, the piano, the mouth organ.
Just constantly making music.
Yeah. And that music wasn't just background noise. It was an act of psychological resilience, a refusal to let the harshness of the prairie dictate their internal environment.
A refusal to surrender, which totally tracks with that story from her childhood.
Oh, the piglet story.
Yes, it's wild. So Marie-Louise and her twin Matilda were home alone when a sow gave birth.
And it's freezing out.
Right. So to keep the newborn piglets from freezing to death, the girls literally pin them to the clothesline by their tiny ears to dry them off in the wind.
It is such a hilarious, chaotic visual.
I can't even imagine seeing that.
But look at the underlying instinct there. It's this desperately creative attempt to preserve life.
No matter how weird the method is.
Exactly. That childhood worldview that you take immediate, bizarre action to save what's in front of you directly informs the woman who later refused to let a stranger go hungry.
That is such a profound connection, and that instinct carried her through a massive, vibrant life.
It really did.
She and Howard eventually retired to North Battleford. And then in 1980, she and her brother Joe were crowned the Centennial Queen and King of Meota.
Honoring them as the district's oldest pioneers.
Yeah. And she passed away in 1985, leaving behind a staggering legacy of 64 grandchildren, plus countless great-grandchildren.
64 grandchildren is just hard to wrap your head around.
Right. We normally think of an inheritance as property or money, but leaving behind 64 grandchildren, I mean, that means leaving behind an entire culture.
It absolutely does. Which I think leaves you, the listener, with something really interesting to consider.
What's that?
Well, we often look at the quirky habits or intense thriftiness of our older relatives as just odd personality traits, like, oh, grandma always does this weird thing.
Right, the funny little family quirks.
But what if those quirks are actually the echoes of historical survival strategies? When you look at your own family's peculiar traditions today, what generational hardships are secretly hiding behind them?